But just a few reflections here, election night, evening rolls on toward wherever it's going. So on this theme of feeling, I think often when we orient ourselves toward intensity in the world, big things happening, from the perspective of the Dharma, there's a couple of channels or pathways we can go down. And one of them is to bring a different narrative to the narrative that is being told to us or imposed upon us or proposed to us by the culture we live in. So as we were talking about in the meditation, so much of the condition and impetus for strong feeling is story, is narrative. So, we're listening to the news, we're hearing about what's happening in the world. In our hearts and minds, we're stitching together a story that's something like, this is what's happening, this is my place in it. Here's what's happening to other people, some people that I love and care about, some people that I fear, some people that I dislike. Here's what's happening in the world, right? So much of what we digest right now, and this has not always been true for humans, but so much of what we digest right now is stories about what's happening far away. You know, how moved you might be about the progress of any number of wars that are going on right now, what's happening in Palestine, what's happening in Ukraine, in Sudan, in any number of places. And what's happening both, in this weave between the local and, say, the national or global, like in tracking, the election. The Dharma was taught initially in the world in a time when certainly there was story and gossip and, politics. The Buddha was immersed in a very complex political moment where there were, aggressive imperial forces, empires expanding, taking over neighboring countries. There were, rival city-states and regions and republics and oligarchies vying for power. The Buddha was in the middle of all of this. And there were stories of what was happening far away, right? Oh, two countries over, this is what's happening. I think that's just different in so many ways from not just the amount of news that we get and the distance that it covers, how current I am on, the movement of North Korean troops to the Kursk region of the Ukrainian border. Like, this is very detailed for knowing what's happening in a war on the other side of the world where I don't know anyone personally who's actually fighting in it. It's relatively distant from me, but I have these news sources that are far-reaching, what we've talked about before as a kind of almost like superpower of clairvoyance, the internet being a kind of superpower of the mind. But without emotional regulation, that superpower can give rise to many kinds of disorganization in the psyche, confusion and overwhelm of many kinds. And so one approach, this is one way where feeling, metastasizes out of narrative, which is the mental is running away, the stories are filling our feed, external, internal, and And triggering waves of emotion, and we can really get caught up in this. One way with the Dharma to meet this is to meet the cultural narrative, you know, the political drama, let's say, with a Dharma narrative, like a narrative about the long-term unfolding of karma. That's like a much more vast time frame in which things unfold. Or a noble truths kind of understanding of the world that just says, it's not about whether this party wins or this party wins, but the underlying force of grasping is going to give rise to suffering and pain and dukkha and hatred and violence. No matter who wins, there's an underlying, process unfolding that is consistent, and it's always been consistent. So there's a couple of these different, these are sort of view teachings, right? The persistence of grasping leading to suffering, the persistence of karmic unfolding over the long scope. These can be skillful interventions where you bring a wisdom narrative to meet a more constricted narrative, right? If my side loses, it's going to be, a kind of nightmarish scenario. And it's important that we don't use a Dharma narrative to erase the very real or ignore or somehow, elide the very real impacts of real world situations. It may well be the case that if this or that group wins, that there will be a huge amount or a change or an increase in suffering, right? And we still have the responsibility to our own hearts and our own path to practice with this reality in a way that is onward leading, that leads toward liberation, that leads toward non-despair, that allows us to stay engaged in the world, As we were just talking about in the sharing, like, what's it like to be engaged for 50 years, and to see administrations come and go, to see, social movements come and go, have victory, have failure. I think this is the heart of what the Buddha realized in his insight into rebirth. In the first insight upon his awakening, the text says, in his words, he says, "I directed my mind to seeing and understanding my previous births. And I saw one birth, two, three, four, five, 10, 100, 1,000, 100,000, cosmic eons expanding and contracting. Here's how I was born and where I lived and what my, what my profession was, my class, what I ate, how I died, and where I reappeared." And part of what we might see in this description, the Buddha's extraordinary visionary capacity expressing as really long-term memory, that part of what he's seeing is that the dramas, not just of any individual lifespan, here was my life and it had purpose and I achieved my goals or I didn't, but also, what do you see if you remember hundreds of thousands of lifetimes? You see, perhaps even on a much grander scale, even on a cosmic scale, what historians and those who try to digest and listen to and read and be present for the scope of human history, even that. That administrations come and go, and empires come and go, and there are periods of prosperity and peace, and periods of war and devastation, and that this has never stopped happening. Right? This has been the process, and it has accelerated as the world has changed into more interconnectivity. But the long millennia of indigenous life on Earth was not itself, a kind of romanticizable, you know, Eden. There were wars and conquests within indigenous tribes. Things moved more slowly, you know. The early empires, you know, even in modern history, we count in terms of, you know, hundreds of years, and now we count empires in terms of, you know, decades, perhaps. Who knows, right? The newest empires are quite new. The American Empire is only a couple decades old. And it might already be changing dramatically, you know. But this is a view that comes from bringing the narrative of the Dharma into conversation with the narratives that we are steeped in, you know. And the narratives of the news cycle rely on, they're capitalist at their core. They require constant engagement in order to make money. And so they rely on the drama of things quickly changing, right? We have to stay engaged. And on a night like today, you know, things are changing hour by hour, right? It's appropriate to track and stay present with, but it's also wise to remember that the narrative we're being fed and present with is not the only narrative. It's not the only truth. There are narratives that suggest that we can rest into a vaster view of who we are as humans and what's going on here than the, you know, the microscopic view of the news cycle. So that's one piece. The other piece we looked at in the meditation was swinging over to the side of, like, okay, you know, whatever the stories are, there's feeling. And our practice teaches us to be with feeling in a way that doesn't just get lost in story, and also doesn't try to, you know, push away a painful story by substituting a different one, right? Just substitute the Dharma story and say, I'm just holding on to the story of karma and I'm not engaging with, you know, the news cycle, is a kind of spiritual bypass also. Spiritual bypass is primarily a narrative maneuver. To say I'm going to use a new story of spirit to displace a story in the culture that feels difficult or painful, or to push away a feeling that feels difficult or painful. But it's just honest to be present with that, you know, whatever's happening, it's giving rise to feeling. And so when we come to feeling, what we find is that what we call emotion or feeling is often it's a response to really two things, or it's a mixture of two things. It's often a response to story and narrative, so a response to what's coming in the mental. And it is itself often a kind of narrative about or describing energies in the body. So the fundamental feelings or you know, foundations of what we call emotion are somatic energies. Often they're nervous system responses to the perception of threat and danger, or safety and ease and connection. And so these are the things that we come to call feelings, but that if we really tune into them, are a kind of, you know, activation in the musculature, and, you know, an increase in the heart rate, or a firming in the belly, or buzzing in the arms or legs. These kind of, you know, bodily expressions of impulses moving through the body mind that come from the nervous system, that come from the perception of, oh, I'm not safe, right? In some way, worry, inspired by the story of how poorly things are going out in the political world, is, you know, it's an appropriate response to the perception of danger in the world. There's danger for ourselves, for those we love, for things we care about. And so my feeling of anxiety about the election results tonight, what feels helpful to me often and feels helpful tonight is to not just float away on the story, like someone mentioned, like I'm just going to obsessively refresh the feed and watch television too late. And it's okay, stay up watching the returns, like no problem. But the practice says, come into the body and actually notice that my reaction to what's happening is a kind of tightening. And I said, what is this tightening? What is actually happening here? And if I really drop in, I can say like, oh, I'm afraid, in a very straightforward way. I'm afraid. And I can tell that the fear is connected to a story, right? Like a fantasy of the future that things are going to be bad. That might be true, might not be true, in whatever way. But what's categorically true in this moment, what's palpably true, is the fear itself. And without, it's a distraction to get into whether it's justified or not or why it's there. But our practice is to come directly to it and say, okay, I'm just trembling. Like, there's just a kind of vibrating. For me, it's in my solar plexus where it comes. And I was feeling it right before we came to meditate. Like one of you said, the meditation really helped. I was very happy to come tonight. But even like a couple minutes before getting on with it, I was just vibrating and I wanted to just like go over to the news and like stare at it. And I had looked at a map earlier tonight and I got momentarily scared. It was too early to get reasonably scared, maybe not, but I got momentarily scared. And then I carried that fear all the way into the meditation. And when I did the instructions that I was suggesting we do of coming into the body, what I felt was just this like vibration of like, you know, the story of that feeling is, I'm not safe, the world isn't safe, it's not going to be safe for the people I care about, for the beings I care about. And to just be with that, with the breath and presence, the nervous system response, because it's rooted in the perception of danger or safety, it deactivates or it shifts when it perceives safety. And so when we come in meditation, we become present, we land in our space, we connect with the body. It's not just a tool to connect with the body to try to, you know, calm or settle activation. Connecting with the body at all is the message that we're safe, right? Just the fact that I can feel my spine sitting up, I'm sitting in the dignified posture, I'm connecting here, and I know where I am. I can see my room, my little office. There's the calendar with the picture of the monk. There's Kuan Yin that I bowed to earlier, opening the space. There's my cat Poppy sleeping on the chair right 3 feet away. And when I actually come into this space and I come into my body sitting, I can't feel threatened because I'm in this safe space. And so in this very immediate way, I could feel threatened again in a moment. I could re-trigger that by thinking about the large narrative story. I could think about the election and re-trigger that feeling. But the feeling will deactivate when I come into the perception of safety in the present moment with the body, because I'm actually safe, you know. And safe is not conceptual. Like I know conceptually, you know, that as someone of Puerto Rican descent who sometimes manifests queerness out in the world, who doesn't make very much money, you know, there are some ways that I'm not reliably safe in this country. There are other ways that I have a lot of privilege and safety and protection, right? I live in Northern California. I'm a highly educated, able-bodied, cisgendered man. I have a lot of power here in some ways, and I'm protected, even though I have, you know, gun-toting neighbors a few feet away. The feeling of safety can't be a narrative. Safety is not a narrative. You can't convince yourself that you're safe, right? Because there's always going to be evidence in the world for why you're not. And anyway, safety isn't an idea, right? It has to be, it's only a feeling. And so you have to construct for yourself the conditions in which to feel that, right? And that might be physical, like I was just describing. It might be communal. It might be like, yeah, watching TV, I'm going to feel less safe, but being here with these people in this kind of conversation, I feel better on this particular evening, you know? Or I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm satisfied that I, you know, gave money and volunteered and called and did my best. That's also a feeling of safety. Like, I participated in a way where I know my place in the thing, right? And that's a protective feeling. And so in all of these ways, what the Dharma and what are these practices suggest to us is that we can live fully engaged in the complexity of the world and the dramas and the narratives, everything that's happening. And we can feel fully the impact of the world on ourselves, right? On our sense of self, on the body. But if we want to stay grounded and continue to deepen in insight and seeing clearly and understanding, we have to learn how to come back to the temporary relative felt sense of safety so that activation can drain from the body. One of the deepest causes of inflammation and, you know, really ongoing symptomatic trauma is failure to deactivate. Like we have a kind of you know, self-protective, you know, vigilant activation that is natural and wholesome and appropriate to dangerous circumstances. But when it never deactivates for decades, right, we start, we can't land. Our meditation won't land, but also it's physically unhealthy and, you know, has all these downstream effects. We have to find, even in the most chaotic situation, we have to find, you know, how to really let go. You know, you see photos of soldiers taking a break, like in a trench, you know, whether old photos from, like, you know, the early century European wars, or recent photos from, you know, like the trenches in Ukraine, and you'll see somebody, like, you know, folding origami or playing a ukulele, and you're like, how can you play like the ukulele, you know, like in a moment like this? And you and the response, you know, could be something like how could I not play the ukulele in a moment like this? Like, this is a completely appropriate response to this moment, you know. And so, you know, and I had that feeling earlier tonight. We were in the sort of like post-dinner special time family zone in the living room before I came in here. And my partner and I, she had pulled out one of the little soprano recorders from the music bin. So I pulled out an alto recorder from the shelf. And we were just like noodling on recorders and played this like sort of, you know, improvised Celtic recorder duet, like medieval, like whatever. And in the middle of playing it, and I noticed that, because this is what I do, you know, I'm listening to what she's doing and I'm like harmonizing. I'm like, you know, making up 16th century appropriate harmonies if I can. And I'm like, yeah, you know, shit's going down. And we're taking 5 minutes to do, you know, 16th century, fake 16th century Celtic recorder playing. And it's part of practice to just be able to do this, whether in meditation or in the arts or in connection with someone else, you know. So, I'll wrap it up with the memory and image of just playing the recorder in the living room on a big election night. and, you know, and knowing that I'll tune in a little while and see what's going on. But to just encourage us to stay close to the heart these days coming up, to stay close to the body. And when we start to spin out in the stories and the worry, and to come back to really, you know, the felt sense of the whole body, come to the central channel and see, where is it vibrating? You know, what's clenching? What's moving to try to protect myself? What is trying to be expressed? It's more important to feel the energy of emotion through the body and feel it move as vibration than it is to express it externally, to scream or cry or shout or find discharge. That's also valuable sometimes. From a Dharma perspective, the heart of understanding comes not from trying to release it by all means necessary, but feeling it with a kind of present intimacy. There's nothing wrong with any feeling. But when we understand feeling for what it is, we learn, and we have to learn again and again, but we learn how to not be caught or lost in the stories, the narratives, the force of the current around us. This is part of what it means to say that the Dharma goes against the stream. It goes against the stream of the ordinary world, because you know how to feel in a way that neither fixates yourself in opposition to the world, or surrenders yourself to the story that everyone is telling. So we'll let it go there for now. Blessings to everyone in this country tonight and in the whole world, hoping and praying for goodness to triumph, not just in this one moment, but yes, in this one moment, but also in the larger cycle that we find ourselves in. And in the grandest vision, may we find the profound liberation from all coming and going, from all gain and loss, the deep liberation of the heart that is the heartwood of the holy life. And may all beings find this heartwood and this deep freedom. All right. So, pause there for now and let it go.